Hello, everybody, and welcome along to another special bonus edition of the Total Italian Football Podcast. It's not a happy one this time. We're here to reflect on the Champions League final that we previewed for you earlier this weekend. I'm Connor Clancy. I've got Ewan Burns here with me, but he's not important enough to get a proper introduction because in Istanbul, at the Atatürk Olympic Stadium, we've got Alessandro Bai, who's back on the podcast. Ali, how are you?
Well, hi, guys. Welcome back. And, well, yeah, we have to reflect on this match. And it's fair to say that it's a tough reflection because, I mean, probably the match was more balanced, more tight than we could expect. So probably this creates a bit of disappointment, deception on the Inter side. But, well, for me, it was just amazing that Inter was able to match Manchester City's level basically for all the match. So I think we should start from that.
I think we should, because it's a funny one, isn't it? Because not many people gave Inter a hope before this game started. And you wrote this in your piece from Istanbul, Ali, that it took a couple of remarkable saves from Ederson to keep them out. And I think Lukaku, Lautaro and Federico Di Marco will be having a few sleepless nights. But the overriding feeling after that, from watching on television, it's hard to gauge it. What do you feel there in the stadium?
It's a kind of strange feeling probably from the stadium because, you know, City had that first chance with Bernardo Silva after six minutes, I think. And, I mean, that just seemed the prelude to what everyone was expecting, you know, supremacy from Manchester City. But instead, something changed after 10 minutes, probably, because Inter started to gain ground. They were very good at eluding the Manchester City's high pressing because they were trying to do it. But honestly, Inter were very patient, even with Onana going with long balls to the strikers. So basically, it was not that easy for City to, you know, put pressure on them. And that was basically one of the key of the first half because Manchester City were really frustrated in the time because they only created, after their initial chance, an opportunity through Haaland, which was brilliantly saved by Onana. But a curious episode, I can tell you, is that midway through the first half, I was in the press box and there was a journalist from Montenegro who just told me, Inzaghi's tactics are fantastic. He was really impressed because it was like, he's destroying Manchester City game plan, you know? He is basically making them run a lot without creating a lot of chances, without being so effective in the ball recovery as they usually are. So I think that moment was when the feeling started to change because, I mean, the match was on. It was clear that Inter was up to the task and that Inter was were trying to, you know, bring probably the balance to the second half, which they made. Unfortunately, I mean, they paid a lot for a single mistake in a Rodri's goal, and after that, as you said, it was really a tough night for Lukaku, especially because he came on after I think 55-60 minutes, and there were a lot of hopes about him, you know, because we had talked a lot also about his possible impact on the game. Because, I mean, for the way the game was playing out, it was the ideal substitution for Inter. But unfortunately, he missed all the chances he had, and two of them were really from close range. So, yeah, he will really regret that those chances, as will do Federico Di Marco, but also Lautaro Martinez, which had arguably the most important role because his chance came before Manchester City's goal. And he really should have, you know, raised his head and looked in the heart of the box where there was probably Calhanoglu or some other teammates ready to score, but he didn't have the lucidity to do it.
Yeah.
So that was the moment that changed the match again because it was clear that against a side with Manchester City, you clearly have to take your chances.
I did think that the Lautaro thing stood out in my mind as well. So I was glad when I saw you echo it in your report that you thought he should have just looked up and played the pass, because earlier in the game, Marcelo Brozovic took a shot when he should have either left it for Lautaro to take and give out wide, or just given it out wide himself. And I couldn't work out what was going on there. It was just those decisions in the final couple of minutes.
Ali, obviously you're there as a journalist for us primarily, but put on your Inter fan hat, given that you are one. How proud, do you feel proud after that game? Because, you know, that didn't go the way that the majority of us expected. You know, Connor and I were on a pod earlier in the week, and, you know, we weren't completely shouting that Inter were going to get battered or anything like that. But, you know, City were the overwhelming favourites to win that game of football, and to win it by a decent margin, very possibly as well. And the way it turned out, it could have so easily gone the other way. Like, obviously, you'll be devastated right now, but do you think you'll feel proud, and Inter will feel proud coming away from it?
Yeah, definitely. I think the feeling is just pride, because as we were saying in the podcast yesterday, in the preview, I mean, no one, even Inter fans, expected Inter to reach the final, to get to this point. So, I mean, once you get to the final, you know it's an impossible task, basically, okay? Because everyone is saying, yeah, you're going to get battered, as you said. But then you go on the pitch and you play like that against Manchester City. I mean, we still have in our eyes the way Manchester City destroyed Real Madrid, which was actually...
And Real Madrid. It's not just anybody, exactly. Right?
It was really impressive. So to think that Inter could be able... Yeah, of course, it was a single match, so everything could happen. But the way they played from the start, they were prepared for the game. As I was saying yesterday about the press conferences. I mean, if you just looked the faces of Inter players and the answers of Inzaghi, I mean, they were really prepared for the task. And it was clear on the pitch. It was clear. So, yeah, every Inter fan, I think, is proud, but it's very tough to end on this note, because you know that Inter are not a team that, unless something change in the ownership, Inter are not a team that will be able to compete for this stage every year.
That's what I wanted to ask you next, was what does come next for Inter? Because usually if a team loses the Champions League final, the rational next step is, well, next year we try and win it, or we try and win the Champions League in the next two or three seasons. I don't think that can be an expectation for this Inter team, can it?
No, definitely. It's very hard because the future is uncertain. I mean, you can't tell who will be owning Inter in a 6 month time. So it's clearly difficult to tell. But I think the main point, of course, will be what the block of strongest players we do, because if you manage to, you know, to keep the likes of Bastoni, Barella, Lautaro, Onana, you still have the backbone of the team, and you can still build around it, okay? And as I already said probably to speaking to Vieri or other people, I said that, yeah, of course, it was unexpected for Inter to get here, but somehow I saw a path in it, because that was the same block that made the Europa League final under Antonio Conte, okay? Mm-hmm. And they made it to several finals. Of course, it's Coppa Italia, Supercoppa Italiana, different competitions, but, you know, the mentality you need to win a final, it's always that, you know, the costume to be there and to compete for the maximum prize. So I think it really depends if these unhoped for success maybe sparks a will in Steven Zhang to invest, to do something, because that would be really interesting, because as I was saying, Inter have a real good backbone in the team. I mean, the players are there, but it depends on whether you want to add or you want to take off. Because of course, if you will sell, I don't know, Barella or Bastoni, just to name a few, this summer, it's just like starting from scratch. So,
how, this is somewhat putting you on the spot, but now that this final's been lost, how do you view the season overall? Because it's been a weird one. Because on the face of it, there's two trophies and a Champions League final and Champions League qualification, but it still feels weird because so much of the season, it was full of bad performances. Do you think it can be viewed successfully?
I don't know. I mean, it would be probably too harsh to judge it as a negative season because, as you said, two trophies, Champions League final, Champions League qualification. On the other side, I mean, it's impossible not to have, you know, a sour taste in the mouth because, yeah, Napoli were outstanding. But when you think that the same team that have just lost the Champions League final playing at the same level with Manchester City lost 12 games in Serie A, 12. It's ridiculous. It's really ridiculous. And I think, of course, it's an aspect that have, I mean, they have to reflect on it because Inter can't afford to be like that in the league. This same block, if they don't change so much, I think has the duty to compete for the Scudetto the next season. Because, I mean, you just proved that you can be to the same level of Manchester City, of Barcelona also. I mean, it can be possible that it's just, you know, random displays or things like that. So I think that, well, I would judge the season as quite positive, but of course, reflections have to be made about the, you know, Serie A performances because, I mean, a group of players who have been winning several trophies in the last seasons, they didn't show the maturity of a winning group, you know, and it's crazy. It's not possible. Probably, as I said, Napoli were too good this year, but I mean, they shouldn't have been like 20 points ahead.
It wasn't an impossible job to keep pace with Napoli.
Yeah.
I understand that completely. Ali, you've been very good. It's gone midnight for me, so it's gone 1 o'clock for you, and you've got press conferences to get to. So we'll leave you. Thank you very much. Go enjoy the rest of your evening. Get some good quotes out of Pep for us. Buon lavoro. We'll chat to you later.
Thank you, guys.
Good night. Ewan, we might as well continue then, and we've got a bit to talk about anyway, don't we? Because there's a lot to unpack. Inter have lost the Champions League final. You were kind of touching ahead to next season. How do we evaluate this season? I think something that needs to be discussed, and it seems a bit insensitive maybe to do it now, but Simone Inzaghi's future. Like, where does that lie now? Because 2 weeks ago, it was not certain. Before the Milan game, it definitely wasn't certain. And now he hasn't won the Champions League. Is that up for discussion again?
I don't know that I've ever known a situation where a manager has simultaneously been so close to the sack and being completely safe in his job at the same time. Because if they'd won this game, he's by default a legend. You know, it would only be the fourth time they've won it in the history of a historic club. Like, that makes you an immediate legend regardless of anything else. And he's won other trophies at the same time. But like you say, he came incredibly close to getting sacked not very long ago at all. And you could argue now that they've not won this game, not a massive deal has changed since that point. I don't think, almost regardless of what they do in the summer, you know, partly on the assumption that they're not going to have, a fantastic summer, they can't go into next season feeling massively positive in a way of like, we'll be better than last season. I can't see how that school of thought happens while he's still the coach. But also, after this season, I can't bring myself to be like, he should be sacked. Do you know what I mean? Because that feels a bit harsh. it's a really weird situation they found themselves in.
It is weird, but I get it, because I was chatting to someone, a journalist back in Ireland, as part of the Irish publication's preview of this game, and I was trying to express the sentiment that Inzaghi's not entirely safe, and because the conversation started out with like, what's the impression of Inzaghi? And I was like, well, extremes on both sides. There's nobody really like in the middle with him, and that is just the way that it is, and the way it's probably going to continue to be. It is a very, very odd situation, and it's hard to get across just how bizarre it is. Alibi's just messaged us during this recording, which is inconvenient, isn't it, given the contents of that message, but it's all right, it's okay.
I'm acting on it now.
It's not the end of the world, all right. What else is there really to discuss from this? I think, look, Inzaghi did a great job this evening. We've got to give him that credit, don't we? Because I can't remember who saw this. It was an Italian person, apologies, that I follow on Twitter. I'll try to find out who it is while you speak. But they basically said that City are kind of like renowned for their ability to move the ball, not only quickly, but to go from one side of the pitch to the other quite quickly and to kind of drag the opposition with them. But there was a feeling tonight that City were going to the spaces that Inter were pointing them towards. I thought Inter were brilliant.
I was quite shocked that that the sort of, I don't quite want to say level of control that Inter had. I wouldn't say Inter were controlling the game, but they were comfortable. They knew what they were doing. They weren't floundering. Apart from the occasional moment where City got into the box, there wasn't the sort of floundering that we've seen quite a lot from Inter this season, and that we've seen almost every team that's ever played against City this season do for quite large portions of the game. Mm. And like you say, the pressing from Inter was largely spot on throughout much of the game. And that's what I was kind of saying to Ali, was that this could have so easily gone the other way. Because the goal, even the goal is one of them that, while a fantastic finish, can very easily not happen. There's a lot of bodies for that ball to get around. Rodri, incidentally, as a side note, is a ridiculous midfielder.
Oh, the finish, but I didn't realise how good the finish was until after the game.
Yeah, but then I can probably think of four or five goals he scored in very recent memory that are better than that one.
There was an Arsenal one that comes to my mind immediately as someone who doesn't necessarily keep up with it at all. But
and that's not the main part of his play. Mm. That's what he's a stupid midfielder. But yeah, there's a goal of that nature, and then there's, you know, the Lukaku DiMarco thing is almost like a freak incident.
Yeah,
that could have easily gone the other way. The Lukaku headed chance.
That's,
I don't know if
we'll
talk about this in better depth. I have more defence for him than some might. I think he should do better, but you know, he's headed it into the floor in front of goal. That is what you're meant to do in that situation. You can't always find a corner. He's probably trying to go back across the way that Edison's coming from, which again is probably the right thing to do. He's, you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful save. And then there was one at the very, very end, wasn't there, which I was typing stuff, so I kind of half missed it.
That was just a bit of a scramble where Gosens like threw himself across. I think it was Gosens anyway. Or Gersons, as the English commentators appear to refer to him as, which is funny. The R is different, isn't it?
That's the thing, I'm trying to work out what's them and what's you being Irish.
The R is from me, but that general thing. It was odd. But anyway, I am someone who always defends Lukaku, and you get the usual nonsense now after this saying, oh, he's bottled it in another big game. It's like
a lot of what feels thinly racist, I might add.
There are elements to it.
The Kaka thing.
Yeah, that is an incredibly uncomfortable meme that is so widespread.
I can't quite put my finger on why.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel right,
does it? I'm completely with you on that. Completely with you on that. And I've never liked it, but I'm not well versed enough to articulate why that is potentially problematic.
The DiMarco one, where the header that hits him.
That's not Lukaku's fault.
He can't do anything about that.
For me, that, why is DiMarco headed it there? Federico, yeah, there's a big, massive flare in that place.
I think as far as DeMarco is concerned, I think you can probably only do one thing there, and it's probably what he's done. You just have to hope. But Lukaku can't get out of the way of that. He's literally got his back to it.
Yeah.
And he's a yard away.
Like, it's unfortunate, though, isn't it?
It's just because it's him.
It's the same thing that happened to them in the Champions League before, where someone headed a ball off him and it saw them knocked out of the group stage. And then he scored an own goal in the Europa League final that they lost. So there is that ammunition there for people to use against them. Now, I don't think he was a disaster tonight, but I do think he should have scored that header. I take your point. He's doing what you're told to do, but it's Romelu Lukaku. He's a really, really good striker. We've seen him in Serie A. He's brilliantly effective when he's on form, and he has been on form recently. I expected him to bury that and for things to take a little bit of a turn in the game's momentum at that point, but it wasn't to be.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's exempt from blame for it or anything like that. I just think a lot of people, the immediate reaction seems to be that it's like historic, horrendous miss. Yeah. I just don't think that's okay. The situation.
Agreed. You've won me back around. Fine. We agree. What else is there to discuss on this, Burnsy?
I think I tweeted as such, and I sort of alluded to it with Ali, but like, this is the way to lose, isn't it? If you had to, in the sense that it's not been a nice week where I found myself doing this exact same rationale in my head with United in the FA Cup final.
And with Fiorentina after the Europa Conference League.
But like, they didn't get battered when there was a genuine possibility that that could have been the way it had gone. It wasn't the sort of performance where you could say that Inter didn't try and win. That wasn't the case. They were positive throughout the game. Not completely launching everyone forward at all times, like being daft, but there was positivity in the play. You know, they were beaten by a very good finish. They had a couple of incredible saves made against them and a couple of very unfortunate bounces in attack. Like, if you had to lose, that's probably what, if offered to you before kickoff, that's what you'd go for rather than a battering or 1-0 where you never ever even slightly looked like you were going to score, sort of thing. And there's been a lot of quotes from just, I can't properly quote anyone, it was just while the telly was on, but the City players have seemed very much in agreement of that could have gone the other way kind of thing. That was a really hard game of football. And I think Inter can be very proud about that.
I completely agree. Completely agree. Is Calcio back? Sorry.
Sorry. I thought we might get one.
That was a tap in.
I think that might actually be the only good thing about all three of them losing, is that that thing can be seen for even more fucking.
But look, right?
I'm
going to come to the defense of Italian football as a whole here, because there is an element of luck in a final, right? Because by the nature of a final, you are a very good team against another very good team. And sometimes you lose matches, right? So if you get to the final, you're kind of doing all you can plan to do, all you can accommodate for. So there is absolutely no shame in Fiorentina, Roma, or indeed Inter losing European finals. The fact that they're in European finals is a huge success. And I think there are, while we will stop a long way short of saying that Calcio is back and it's going to rule the world and blah de blah de blah, Italian football's still a fucking mess, but there are really encouraging signs from the European campaigns of not only the three finalists this season, but Juventus got to a semi-final, Milan got to a semi-final, Napoli had their best ever Champions League campaign and got to a quarter-final, and next year, Atalanta are back in Europe, and when Atalanta were getting into Europe, they were the best performing Italian team in Europe, so you know what that means next year, Burnsy. What's better than getting to a final and losing?
Getting to the quarter final and losing.
Atalanta, 2023-24, Europa League or Europa Conference League champions. You've heard it here first.
Which one are they in by default?
Europa League, but I kind of want them to drop into the Europa Conference League because I back them to win that.
I kind of want that too. I love the Conference League of the 2 years it's happened because it's thrown up winners who, while not like tiny clubs or anything, have, you know, it's very special to win it. What I'm scared is that say, for argument's sake, Liverpool are in the Europa League next season, which they are, if they have a stinking campaign, group stage campaign, for whatever reason, and drop in, then it's going to... If you end up with... A bit like when United won the Europa League in 2017, that there was a bit of an inevitability about it. Even though it was still hard, they were miles and away the most massive team in there compared to everybody else who was left in it.
Yeah.
And there's something of a procession about it. That would be a shame if something like that happened. Whereas that would not be the case if Atalanta were doing it.
No,
so I'm willing to back that.
It wouldn't be. I've been in parties where the fans have taken over the streets of Bergamo for just qualifying for Europe. If they won. We're not here to talk about Atalanta. Don't let me do this. You need to rein me back in when I start doing this.
Well, they've not just lost a final.
I think we can leave it there. Patrons, thank you very much. Tomorrow, there's more content to come on the website. There won't be another podcast tomorrow night. There will be one early in the week, though, because I'm off to Reggio Emilia for the Serie A relegation. Such a fall from glamour, that, isn't it? We've just been talking to someone at a Champions League final. I'm at the Serie A relegation playoff in Reggio Emilia, no less, between Spezia and Verona. And there's serious concerns that it might kick off between fans because they don't like each other and they both hate Reggiana, who also play in the Mappe Stadium and are permanently pissed off because it's known as Sassuolo's home because they've just taken it over. So what could go wrong?
And they're in a stupid game that will have angered everyone anyway. You know, it's a bit like sticking a load of bees in a cage and rattling it.
It is a bit. I just need the Parma Ultras to show up to scrap with the Reggiana fans as well.
Yeah. Actually, wasps rather than bees. That's a bit harsh on bees.
Yeah, might bring them along with me. Not the bees, the Parma fans. But anyway, we'll leave it there. Ewan, thank you very much.
Yeah, well, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'm really upset.
I can hear you breathing at the start of the podcast. I had to mute your microphone. Right, patrons, we'll be back very, very soon. Thank you for your continued support, and we'll speak to you then.